Here we are for Super Tatis for Parshas Naso. Some of us probably have a little bit of jet lag from a couple of days of Yontif and now an Erev Shabbos. So this is a little help for the preparation for those Shabbos sudos, which are obviously extraordinarily important, especially since we're riding high after Yontif. Three stories. The first story is about Rav Yashiv, who was approached by some folks asking him, trying to figure out, you know, a key to learning. And obviously the expectation when speaking with Rav Yashiv was either some etzos on how to do chazara, how to remember a little bit better, maybe how to maintain a greater amount of focus or a little bit more diligence, or alternatively, maybe he would come up with some sort of skula or something like that. And when he was posed, you know, with the question of, well, how is it that you're going to basically get to a point of excellence in your learning and to be able to, you know, being able to really succeed, his answer was very, very simple. He says, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu had achieved the most in Torah over anybody, you know, anybody ever else. And Moshe Rabbeinu's greatest point of distinction was that he was an Anav Mikol Adam, is that he had humility. If you're interested really in trying to achieve something in Torah, the key is anava, and not only that, but anava generally with respect to all of this stuff is, you know, perfecting your midos. So obviously when we focus very much on learning, occasionally the cerebral part of our lives can kind of take over, and occasionally that can come at odds with our midos. But Rav Yashiv reminded us not to do that. So there's a second story. This is a story that happened in Bnei Brak, and apparently there is. It's on a street called Avtalion Street. I haven't spent too much time in Bnei Brak myself, but apparently there's this very, very famous story of a great Talmud Chacham named Rav Avram Ganakovsky, who is sitting at the top of this very large ladder on Avtalion Street. And there's a story behind it. You know, you usually don't see great Talmidei Chachamim sitting right at the top of a ladder, but the story behind it goes as follows. Rabbi Ganakovsky was sitting and learning in his home, and the window was open, and all of a sudden he heard some crying. And instead of closing the window like many of us would do, you know, you hear kids crying or whatever, it would bother him. He actually, instead of closing the window, he closed his Gemara. And when he closed his Gemara, he went outside and tried to figure out, well, what is, you know, what's the problem? So he went and found the home, the apartment from which the cries were coming. And he kind of, you know, looked around, tried to figure out, maybe, you know, see what was happening. And based on the circumstantial evidence that was, you know, in that area, it sounded like there were a bunch of young children that were left alone in their house. Probably what happened was, you know, the parents saw their little kids were asleep and, you know, they needed to go out maybe to get groceries or something like that. And they went out and they just assumed the kids were going to stay asleep. And of course, they woke up and felt like they were completely alone at home. And you know, it was obviously very frightened, and they started crying like they were left alone, and it got them very, very upset. So he determined, you know, what had happened. He went home, and he got the biggest ladder that he could. He got some cookies or some treats from his wife, and he went all the way at the top of the ladder. And of course, he wasn't a young man at the time, so to get at the top of the ladder, of course, is out of character, but also it's It took some physical exertion for him. He sat at the top of the ladder and he called the little kids. He said, hey, why don't you come out, you know, to the porch? I've got some cookies for you. Let me, you know, would you, you know, I'll be here with you until your parents come home. So that's, you know, that perfectly fine. And he said, well, do you want to, you know, do you want to do songs or do you want to do stories? And they said, oh, we'll do some stories. Oh, okay. But not scary stories, you know, funny stories, happy stories. He said, no problem, absolutely. Why don't I tell you some happy stories about Gedolei Yisrael? And he sat there and, you know, the kids kind of tidied themselves up. They came, they had the cookies, and, you know, for an hour, this extraordinary Talmud Chacham was sitting there telling stories to these little kids. And the way that the story was dramatized, and I was very moved by it, was that this person who never wasted a minute felt like, you know, to stop the pain of these little children, you know, was worth, you know, an hour of his time and to, you know, put himself up on a ladder. So perhaps that picture is really worth being framed. There's one third story I saw about the Chassam Sofer that I thought was actually quite remarkable. And this story, apparently he would occasionally repeat his shiurim through a cycle when he was teaching. And what had happened was somebody had gotten hold of very meticulous notes of his shiurim and was able to kind of predict what was going to happen in his shiur. But, you know, above and beyond that, I think he was trying to profit from them financially as well. But above and beyond that, it sounded like he was kind of mimicking the Chassam Sofer a little bit in the way that he would gesture and gesticulate when he would give a shiur. And you know, usually the way that shiur was, it was a lot of yir shamayim, a lot of focus and everything else. And today the boys, they were not nearly as focused. They were smiling, maybe they were giggling a little bit. Chassam Sofer got wind of this and you know, called them out. I said, "What's different today, guys? What's happening?" Nobody answered. He said, "Come on, let's hear it." And finally he turned to one of the one of the students and said, "Listen, you know, I know you, my dear son. Tell me what's going on." And he finally got, you know, wind of what had happened, and he just left the room. And he put the pressure on, and he finally figured it out. And you know, his response was just silence. So the next day, he called everybody back. In fact, he said, "If you don't come back, you can't, you know, can't have shiur or whatever." And you know, everybody knew that this was trouble. And obviously, the perpetrator felt absolutely petrified by what had happened. And the Chassam Sofer finally came into the room, and he said, "Listen, guys, here's the story. Yesterday, I was malbim bnei chaverai. I embarrassed one of you, and I feel like I can't give shiur since I embarrassed you, because embarrassing somebody is like killing somebody, and the repercussions are so great." And he begged for mechila, and the person could barely get the words out of himself, but he forgave him. And then he said, okay, we can give shiur. And he just went back on. And really, this story happened the opposite of how we'd have expected it to happen, because what we would have expected was that he would tell them, "Guys, you can't do this. Your midos aren't great. Everything else is bad." But really what it ended up happening was Chassam Sofer just was such a refined person that he couldn't bear, you know, anything which even had a shemetz of an avera about him. So that just speaks to, you know, the pristine nature of his midos. It's important to have a couple of these very beautiful midos stories, especially to balance out, you know, some of the hasmada stories that we see that really we need to make sure that we have a full package, both with ourselves and to try to impart for our children. Three divrei Torah. First one's quick. This is said by a lot of different people in a lot of different ways. I saw it this time in the name of Rav Simcha Bonim, but it's in, you know, everybody says it in one way or another. All the parsha, the Nesiim bring what is substantively the same korban. And it could have just said, "And this one did it, and this one did it, and this one did it." But instead, it mentions all of the details of all of these karbonos. Why? So the answer is every nasi brought because they wanted to do it. They brought it from their own special circumstances. They didn't bring it. They didn't bring it because they wanted to be a copycat, but they wanted to do what they were supposed to do. Even though they were completely from different circumstances, different places, different lives, different perspectives, it was the same avoda. And they all wanted to do it themselves. And this is probably, he doesn't say this, but this is kind of prop shot. We say every day in Psuki de Zimra, you know, we want to sing Kadosh Baruch Hu a Shir Chodesh, a new song, and then all of a sudden we say the same words as before. Yes, but we're different now. So it's important to have that feeling of hischadshus and that feeling of individuality and that feeling of ownership. So that's one. Second one is the Nazir's Korban. So it sounds like it's a stira because Rashi quotes Rav Elazar Kapar in the Gemara that says that a Nazir brings a Korban, should tzira satzmoni miyayin. I mean, it sounds that his separation and asceticism in and of itself is a problem. It was wrong for him to go into being a Nazir, but at the end, he brings a Korban as well. And the Ramban says this is because he goes back to normal, to the, you know, the world of Taivos, to the world of desire. So how could it be that it was wrong to go in and wrong to go out all at the same time? You know, you got to pick one side. So Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv in Sum Derech says there's a way to make peace between the approaches. Is the answer is he changed. When he decided that he was going to separate, perhaps it was wrong, but now that he was there, it's a yerida to change. Not to say that we don't have aliyos. This is a nuanced point that he doesn't make, but I would think that everybody have to agree. We have aliyos that are periodical, certain time only. Aseres Yemei Tshuva aliyos. We have aliyos just for Pesach, things we kind of feel are sustainable for whatever that applicable period is. But when we do something that is sustainable, that could create expectations. So this is not to chill, you know, the thought of wanting to attain more, but it's always more that we should be making decisions that are within our, you know, our range of something that we could keep, because that's really the way to build who we are. We should try, Be'ezras Hashem, to try to stay on those levels. Last thing, there's a special parsha here we see about stealing from a ger, and it's called a me'ila, which is like a misappropriation. And this is even though we have Nisr of Gezel already. We're already told it's usher to steal because according to the Sforno says the issue is that this has a concept of Chilul Hashem involved. We're really desecrating Hashem's name because, you know, ideally a ger is coming to join up with Klal Yisrael. They're coming under the Kanfei Ashchina and you're just completely draining them of that beautiful vision of what it means to be a Jew or an Eved Hashem. And it's like, you know, you're just deflating all of that beauty which they had, you know, they had come upon. And this is really expanded at any time we burst somebody's idealistic bubble about Avodas Hashem or Yiddishkeit, because and that's really the concept. It's brought out in the postgim. Chilul Hashem is just if somebody expects you to be operating on a certain level and you let them down, similar to what we had said about the Nazir, you let them down, that's a diminution in Kavod Shamayim. So that's why it says in the this forum, Chilul Hashem is just anything which is below your darga. So it's just a kind of consistent with what we had said about Rashi and the Ramban. Last is my thinking question that I actually have been thinking about myself for quite a bit. So napping on Shabbos is a mitzvah, but learning on Shabbos, you get multiplied time for your learning. Napping on Erev Shabbos is not a mitzvah, but you don't get a multiple of your learning. The question is, if somebody needs, you know, to rest a little bit, is it better to take a little nap on Erev Shabbos so you have energy for Shabbos and get the most out of it? Or is it better to take a nap on Shabbos even though you're going to miss some of that time? But in exchange for that, what you're doing at that very moment is a mitzvah. Thanks, everyone, for learning. Have a great Shabbos.